comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you happen to be, all around this gorgeous place we call Earth. Thanks for being here. I'm here because you have a right to know. I'm here because you matter. Tomorrow is June 30, and that is the date for our final Alternative Universe Eye Conference. I hope you got your tickets. No genius and not. Some of you are geniuses and you got your ticket. And we've got some great speakers lined up. We've got Dr. Brooks Agnew. We've got Micah Hanks, Courtney Brown, Jerry Wills, and Greg Bishop. Each of these people, true heavy hitters. And it's going to be a great conference. I'm looking forward to it. And it's something that, you know, it's a great value, and some of you took advantage of it, and that's good. The K-Files is our free weekly newsletter. For those of you who are brand new to the show, you don't know about it. Well, the K-Files has, we've been publishing that now since 2000, and we still have subscribers that subscribed in 2000. So it must be pretty good. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to. It's truly free, no strings attached. And the link is on the website. It takes that long to subscribe. Just click where it says K-Files. Subscribe. You're going to get an email in return, and it has a link in it for you to activate your subscription. Click the link, and you're good to go. It really is that simple. And I hope you'll afford the time to click a link and to subscribe. Tonight, we're going to be talking with somebody that you're very familiar with. It's been a while since he's been with us. His name is Robbie Thomas. And Robbie is world-renowned, actually, as a psychic, particularly working with law enforcement agencies, solving the seemingly unsolvable crimes. Crimes that standard investigation has come to a dead end with, and they need a little outside boost, a little additional information. And he's been quite successful with that. He's also a friend of mine, personally. And I know him personally. And what a great guy. And we're going to be talking with him about something that he has done that steps outside of his normal method of operation just a little bit. Robbie has a bunch of books published. And he's well known as a speaker, he's well known as a writer, and as a psychic, and a filmmaker. But this time, he's done something a little bit different, and I can tell you, it's pretty exciting stuff. So he'll join us on the other side of this first break, and we'll be talking with Robbie Thomas. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. This is Kevin Smith, and let me welcome you aboard another ride into the strange and unexplained. And anytime you're talking to Robbie Thomas, you are talking about things in the realm of the strange and unexplained, although he himself is not really all that strange. But it's been a while since he's been with us. Robbie, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me back.
Robbie, I lied a little bit. I said you yourself were not so strange and unexplained, and that's a little bit of a lie.
Yeah, I kind of chuckled at that.
But it's been a while since you've been here, and we've had a lot of water under the bridge since you were here. The last time you were here, we were not talking about one of your books. But let me ask you a question. Are you really a psychic?
You know, my kids, you know, they look at me and they say, sometimes you're psychotic, Dad. getting into the strange and the wonderful world of Robbie Thomas. I look at it as someone who has an ability just like everyone else, and I've just been able to tap into certain things that some people can't and some people can. I've known you for a long time, and we have to put bookmarks or, you know, some trademark on something to give an identification marker to who a person is. And people call themselves psychic mediums and what have you. I've never, you know, personally, and I've always said this, I've never liked the term because I was given a name, and my name's Robbie by my mother. But how do you classify me? Just a guy who goes out and does what he does.
Well, I just wondered if you were really a psychic and really were still a psychic. You know, I'm still a former police chief.
Oh, yes, you still are. And, you know, it's amazing to come to the concept of that.
Well,
thank God for that.
That's an inside joke, folks. Anyway, Robbie has written a book. Well, that's no news. Robbie has written a lot of books. But this book is called Time Shift. And this book is a novel. And you were saying, Robbie, that it was difficult for you to come up with a label that really fits you. And, you know, it's kind of difficult to come up with a label that fits this. It's sci-fi. It's paranormal. It's a thriller. It's action. There's not one label that fits this. And how do you describe Time Shift?
You know, you were going down the right alley there. I looked at it as the premise of we're sitting on the precipice of something that's totally bigger than what we are. Writing a movie script, just flat out writing a movie script itself, and then looking at what took place from that moment, and then detailing everything, how do I change it, and how do I put it into a scope where people can actually enjoy this and not get spooked by the truth. A factual moment twisted by a fictional tale. It's hard to grasp it and put it into words. I just went with the flow and it progressed, and it's almost like the molecular structure of everything that was coming together. It signified, you know, the poignant part of who we are as a human race, not one or many races, but, you know, just one race upon this earth. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing.
There's a reason I'm going to ask this question. This is not frivolous, okay? What is your ethnic heritage, your ethnic background? Where are your ancestors from?
You can call me a Heinz 57. My family resonated from England, Scotland, France, America. And, you know, in the scope of everything, I have family members who live in America, who are still in Scotland, England, and I'm a Canadian.
You are so all mixed up.
I am mixed up,
yeah. Okay, now here's the reason I ask that. And so with you describing your heritage, you have some Celtic blood. Am I right?
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. When I read this book, I read stuff that really resonates with a lot of the paranormal folklore and legends of the Celts, which, by the way, you change the names and you can take it to the Mayans, change the names of the deities and so forth, and you take a lot of these stories to the Mayans. I mean, they're very similar. It's interesting that studies have been done about people who say that they have had contact with extraterrestrials, and a very high percentage of those people have Celtic and Native American or First Nations ancestors. It's the mix. Do you have any First Nations ancestors?
My mother used to tell me that down the line, the Métis were part of our heritage. My mother explained how far down. So yes, absolutely, somewhere down the line, when the Scottish came over to Canada, being MacArthur and the clan of MacArthur, they mixed and they married First Nation people, and down the road here we come. So yeah, my mother explained that to me.
Mm-hmm. And you know, I have that mixture. And I have looked into, okay, so why? And nobody seems to really have an answer for why such a large percentage of people who are Celtic and First Nations or Native American seem to sort of resonate with the psychic and the paranormal world and seem to have an affinity with, not an affinity for necessarily, but an affinity with extraterrestrials. Do you have any theory about that?
I just feel we are much more in the workings and have been in the plan. It, you know, when you read the book, you're talking parallel worlds. We're mm-hmm. talking different timelines, ley lines. And I know you grasped that as you read. And it resonates in the fact of we weren't just a one, again, many races, but we're all one human race. Are we part of? Absolutely. There's no definitive way of saying, no, we're not. There is a way of saying, yes, we are, and looking for the clues and what comes from that is I tried to, without me giving it away, and as we talk about the book.
Well, we're not going to give it away, but we are going to talk about that book.
Absolutely.
Okay. But, no, my question specifically is, I just wonder if you had any inkling of an idea as to why this particular blood mixture seems to have such a high percentage of people that are psychic, that are mediums, that are shaman, and that claim to have had contact with extraterrestrials. It is a mystery. I've looked at it. I have no idea, but I want to get back to the book. Now, part of this book, as we said, we're not going to give it away, but there are some things in it we are going to talk about. This book, you know, we're dealing in this book with something as ancient as the Mayan culture, as modern as today, as advanced as university level historians and physicists, as involved as meetings in the president's office. This is a great mixture of stuff here. Yet, when you talk about time shift, you don't seem to focus on and key in on the standard stuff that's going around now, like Nibiru and 2012 and, you know, big meteor showers and all that. It's entirely different.
Yeah, the perspective and the premise I give in the book is too many people are central focused on what has been laid out for them for so long that if you take the logical route, what is proper in what we all feel deep inside, you're going to take yourself, you're going to step aside from whatever has been written and take a look at a different view. So I give everybody a different objective so they can have a perspective of looking at what is, I would say, in layman's terms, easy to understand. And that way there, it's more idealistic, it's more realistic than saying the epilogue of having an apocalyptic meteor shower, world is going to combust, this type of, you know, Nibiru, that type of venue, when we can look at what it really truly is. And, you know, I almost gave it away, but I, you know, it's
well, not exactly, because I'll tell you, people aren't going to figure this out till they get to the end of the book.
Yeah, exactly, and that's the part I didn't want to say, because when they get to the end of the book, you know, it's amazing, because I've had major critics read this book, and they've all said to me from start to finish, and I'm pleased at what you're talking with me about tonight on the show, is it's got so many different twists and turns, but then finally when you get to the end of the book, it's almost like the door opens, and it's refreshing. And it's letting everybody see for what it really is.
I recently watched a movie, which is, I mean, that's something that needs to go in the Guinness Book of World Records anyway, because I don't watch too many. Once every few months, I will have a little bit of downtime and I'll watch a movie. And I watched a movie called Cypher. And your book doesn't deal with the same plot, doesn't deal with the same information. In that sense, it's not like it. However, Cypher takes so many turns in the plot, and you're so sure you have it figured out, and it keeps, just when you think you've got it figured out, it takes a left turn. So you get that figured out, and then it takes a right turn. And there's no way till you get to the end of the movie to figure it out. You don't figure it out. And I'm good at figuring stuff out, as you know.
Absolutely.
I didn't figure it out. And then the ending hit, and I was like, oh, you got to be kidding me. This is great. The ending was super, totally unexpected. In that sense, in that way, your book, Time Shift, is like that movie. And speaking of movies, this really ought to be a movie, Robbie. Are you? Have you been contacted yet by anybody about turning this into a movie?
You know, it was really amazing. And I'm glad you asked this. Just last weekend, I was in Toronto, Canada, and I sat with one of the largest casting directors, and Michael Lamport, who's doing our show, introduced and talked, and he mentioned the book and certain things, and I'm hoping that it catches somebody's eye and they want to take this and make it for more than what it is. I've written the script detailing to where the event took place, and I'm sure you're going to talk about the event that took place that spurred the book, but I had to stop, and I can finish the script. There's no two ways about it, because the book is written now. I'm just glad, you know, there's many people who have said it should be a movie.
It really should. It should, and I can even think of certain actors I would like to see in those parts, you know, but in those roles. All right. Let's talk about the event that sparked the story. Tell us about it.
I was writing this script in the same name, Time Shift, and I made a posting on my Facebook page on a certain date back in 2011, introducing the writing, you know, hedging on the apocalyptic type venue, what was supposed to happen from the abyss, and so on. Then I made another claim, posting. And in the posting, I put in, not brackets, but arrows, pointing inward, saying panic. And I had this vision. It was in my head. I'm writing this down. And at the same time, I'm going back and forth to the script. So on March 10, I place a phone call to a film producer who worked and is close friends with Mark Tillman, who did It with Stephen King, MacGyver, RoboCop, and what have you. And I'm talking to him about the movie script I'm writing. And I said, why not, you know, would this is just totally way out there, because no one's ever seen something like this on the scale that I want to write it. And why not put a 9.0 earthquake in the South Pacific off the coast of Japan, tsunami, and then it affects on a rebound coming to Peru, Canada, and the United States. And the whole timeline and what have you. And he loved it. So I wrote it in the script, and it's date stamped. And again, there was a posting on March 10th. I'm writing all day long, creating the script, and its magnificence and what have you, and giving it the warped sense of what it should be. Then the very next day, the happening happened. It was horrific. I remember sitting on the couch drinking my coffee, and was on TV. My wife and I looked at each other, and it was 8.9 on the Richter scale. Japan had an earthquake. I was dumbfounded. And then they changed it to 9.0. And then the phone rang, and it was the producer. And he couldn't believe it, and I couldn't believe it. And it's already been posted, and not once but twice, and then in the script, and then corroborated with him on the phone the day before. And then I looked at it, and I thought, am I missing something here? You know, was I given a vision, which you cannot stop the inevitable, and on that scale of magnitude?
Okay, Robbie, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we have to step away. We have a break coming up, and we're going to get into a bit more of the story of Time Shift. Folks, we're not going to give it away, but we are going to give you enough to make you want to go get this book. I'm telling you, you want to get the book. We'll be back right after this.
To the Kevin Smith Show.
You are indeed listening to the Kevin Smith Show, and welcome back. We're talking with Robbie Thomas. He is a world-renowned psychic, primarily dealing with solving seemingly unsolvable crimes. And he is an author. He's got a bunch of books out. He's a filmmaker. He's a script writer. He's all kinds of stuff. And we're talking about his latest book. It is a novel within our genre, and it is called Time Shift. Robbie, I want to talk a little bit about the plot here. A little bit about the problem, not the solution, just the problem that this book presents. Interestingly, you have two college professors that are friends and have very differing views on the validity or even the possible validity of Mayan writings. One of them says, well, it could be. They've been amazingly accurate over the years. And the other one says, basically, hey, look, I'm a man of science. I don't buy this stuff. And, you know, but they're friends. And something happens on the planet that scares the living bejesus out of the powers that be in every country. And it happens in Russia. It happens in China. It happens in India. And it begins to happen, of all places, over Kansas. And I just thought about when these guys, they got a call from the White House. They were summoned to the White House to meet with the president and to give their input, if they had any. As to what this is and what is the solution. And as soon as I read that, a famous phrase came to my mind, and that is, we're not in Kansas anymore, Toto. And I just wondered if that was on purpose. Did you choose Kansas because it's sort of the mythical everything is okay with America?
No, it was amazing because I wanted to touch upon the heartland of America. You know, looking at various places where I could have structured the storyline and give the premise, I wanted to put it something that was way out into... I could have created a metropolis, mm-hmm. but I didn't. What I brought it down to was the grand scale of everything down to what everybody could relate to. Just a normal little town.
Well, see, that's the key word. When I think of Kansas, I think of, okay, this is normal America. And I mean that in a good sense. I'm in no way am I saying anything to slight Kansas or to, I'm not mocking Kansas. I think that's a very positive thing. That this is about as normal America as you can get. And now we've got something happening over a little town in Kansas, or near, just outside a little town in Kansas, that's about the most abnormal thing that has ever, well, it is the most abnormal thing that has ever happened on the planet. And, you know, it was just a great contrast. Now, those who are not Canadian or United States of America citizens, that little nuance may escape you because you may not be that familiar with Kansas. But Kansas is like right in the center of the United States, and it's about as normal America as you get. The further west you go, the kookier it gets. The further east you go, you know, generally speaking, the more almost European in their outlook on the world it gets. And Kansas is Kansas. You know, it's just, it's not kooky, it's not European. It's just Kansas. It's just normal. And then here we have this big abnormal thing happen. Describe for us the abnormal thing, Robbie. What is it that's happening out there?
The abnormality of what is happening in our world is a combining or coming together of parallel structured universes. And in saying that, we're looking at man as we are now here, taking life for granted. And in the scope of things, we have every religion. It's mentioned in the book, you know, about vast different societies around the world and how they fall to their knees and what have you. It's beyond that. It goes beyond the scope of that. It belongs to, we are interfaced with different realms. We're taking things for granted in this life, which, again, you know, we look at the scope of things of wars and destruction, the meek and the many, and people just look, you know, we don't take the moment for what it is for humanity. We take it for that society or for this country or what have you. Mm-hmm. I just looked at it as a spiritual movement.
Yeah, but the people in Kansas in that little town, they didn't look up and see spirit. They looked up in the sky and saw something. What did they see?
They seen a dark mirrored image of our world colliding and looking beyond the scope of something that's totally different, that the destruction around the world, it presented itself. It's showing them that this is what is going to happen. The alternative is up to mankind and mankind himself.
So they look up in the sky and it's like looking into a mirror. But instead of seeing their face looking back, they're seeing our world looking back. But they're
pretty
seeing
much
our world in destruction looking back.
Yes. Total chaos, destruction, the naive of man and what leads to his demise.
It happened in Russia, it happened in China, it happened in India, it's happening over Kansas. And as I said, the various leaders of these countries all around the world, it just scares the bejesus out of them. They don't know what it is, they don't know what has happened. However, there's also some real destruction taking place, right?
Absolutely. And I tried to put into the score of the scope of things what reality, what really did happen. When we look at the fact that the 9.0 did take place, that was true. That was devastation beyond anyone's magnitude of thinking. Not only that, then you have the wall of fire in Russia and the volcanoes and the devastation of earthquakes and taking it and putting it into Los Angeles and you know, and creating representable people who we look up to and changing the names but keeping the same prerogative of the president and first lady and then so on. And it's so feasible that if you, myself personally, writing the book, when authors have or do writing, sometimes they have to do a rewrite or they don't like what's there. I didn't have to do that once, not once throughout the book. I wrote, it stayed. What you see is that's what came out. There was no picking over, going, changing lines or what have you. So it was like a roadmap off of the script, which was pretty much, you know, the way I wanted it to go. And you know, in saying me, it's not me, it's the way I was driven to write the book. Again, looking at the premise and the objective here, it's to show that we're living in a time that things like this can really happen. It has happened. It was written before it happened, just days before it happened. What's not to say that what's in the meat of the book and what's at the end of the book won't happen as well?
I think it's also important for people to realize we're talking about how people looked up into the sky and what they could see was like a mirror of Earth, but a dark mirror and destruction. Now, I think what is important to realize is that's not a vision, and it's not a mass or group hallucination. What's happening is two separate universes slightly out of phase with each other, but just enough closely phased, synchronized, that they are colliding, and it's causing as you say, a time shift. And folks, it's a mind bender. You got to read this book. It's called Time Shift, The Paradigm. Why did you choose The Paradigm?
You know, interesting, and I'm glad you asked me that. When I was doing the script, it was just Time Shift, based on the lore of the movement we've all heard of, and then when the actual movement happened the day after the vision, which was written and posted, I started to sit there and think, okay, I'm in a paradigm. Now, you've seen Dead Whisper in mm-hmm. the Sally House, mm-hmm. and Dead Whisper, and back in 2005 when we filmed it, we see where the spirit of the individual went ahead an hour, spoke a complete sentence structure of a live human being, which was captured an hour after on film, and it was amazing. So I took that perspective of the paradigm, living and walking within the different realms, and that's where it came.
Mm. Did you have somebody in mind as role models for the characters of the two professors?
You know, it was amazing. I looked at a couple individuals who were offset of each other, yet were practical in a quirky way, impractical. One who's bent on history and fortitude of knowledge that we have at present, and one that was based on complete science mm-hmm. and the relativity of what could be a theory put into practical use. I did have a couple people in mind, and I put them in play, and it just rubbed off each other, because when I looked at how they were in real life and then how they worked and done what they've have, and then I put it into the book, and it just went from there.
Okay, we're going to step away for a break. We'll be back in just a bit, and I got a couple of more questions. One about your role models that you used for the two professors, but I'll save that till we come back. Ladies and gentlemen, this evening we're talking with Robbie Thomas, world-renowned psychic, film producer, and author, and a friend of mine. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest is Robbie Thomas, and we're talking about Time Shift. It's a novel. It's based on some real stuff, but it is a novel, and it is fantastic. Once you pick it up and start reading, you need to make sure that, and at least this is my opinion, make sure you've blocked out plenty of time to sit down and just read uninterrupted. You don't want to put this down. When we went away for break, Robbie, I said, I have a couple of questions yet about the professors involved here. The reason they are so interesting to me is because they are almost a mirror of the president and the vice president in this way. You have one professor who is open to this possibility that what was found on a tablet in Peru, Mayan writings, carvings, on this tablet in Peru, that talks about this very sort of thing happening at some point in the future. he's open to the possibility that, hey, you know what, that might be precisely an accurate prophecy of what we're seeing here. The other professor is, oh, that's nonsense, you know, it's a far-out idea, but these guys are friends. Now, when we get to the president and the vice president, we have the same thing. The president is open. He wants to hear what the professor is saying about the Mayans and the possibility of finding a solution in those writings. He's open to that. When the vice president comes in, he's of the same mindset as the other professor. And, you know, he's got the chuckles about it. Did that just happen, or did you really think about making those two sets of characters sort of similar?
Similar. I'm glad you caught it. Yeah, it's amazing, because I had to give the alter ego to, here we have the president and the vice president. Now I have to, I don't want the storyline to be so heavy weighted with the political ramifications of, you know, them sticking their nose in and having the lead on everything, when then we can have a total different left turn and have the same type of ego and alter ego of Gates and Michael and David, who are the actual president and vice president of Alter Ego.
It's almost like you, it's like a tennis match, and they're playing doubles.
Going back and forth.
Mm-hmm. And on one side you have the VP and Professor Number One, and on the other side you have the President and Professor Number Two. And, you know, but it, and this is cool, folks. I'm going to tell this much of it, and I'm going to leave it to you to get the book and read it. But I'm going to tell you this much about the Mayan tablet. The problem is it's incomplete. It's broken. And so it tells the story about a day coming when this very phenomena that the Earth is experiencing would happen. And it indicates that there is another path that could be traveled that could lead out of the problem. And perhaps there, the tablet's broken, so they don't know, but this, there's this other path mentioned that they could take, and perhaps they think it might, in fact, save the world. But they don't know what that is, because the tablet that they found, it's a stone tablet. When they found it, it was broken. And so the rest of the story is not even available to them. What a problem.
Yeah, absolutely.
What a problem. You know, I was, you know who Jerry Wills is, I think, don't you, Robbie?
Yes, I do.
I was talking with Jerry Wills today about this and was telling him about it, and because he's done so much work down in Peru, and you know, he's done a lot of expeditions and exploring down in Peru. So I thought he would be interested in this story, and he was quite interested. But I was telling him about this, and let me ask you if you think such a tablet actually exists.
You know, it's amazing, because envisioning the storyline and going along, you know, I'm going to step back here for a second. When the book came out on May 10th, it was amazing. You know, I was in glory. Here it is. It's finally out. It took a year to write prior to the happenings of, in March and what have you.
Prior to what we now call the Fukushima event.
Yes, exactly. And on the news, on CNN, that very day, it was amazing. They said they had a Mayan calendar they discovered, and they uncovered it, took the dirt and the dust and whatever, and the geologists cleaned it all up. And it was a full calendar. and it goes beyond what. And I just thought, this is just symbolic, because the book come out today. They just found that in the news today. It just got put on the news. It was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So is there a tablet, you know, without being swayed by what I've seen on the news and looking at the broken part of a tablet? Yeah, I believe there was a tablet. I honestly do. I believe it was broken, you know, not by man, but, you know, over time or what have you, or pieces might have come apart or what have you. But yeah, absolutely. And we as a human race, we just got it wrong.
I'm very glad to hear this, because, you know, maybe, folks, on the one hand, I'm going to admit something, and on the other hand, this is a great book. You got to get it. But here's what I'm going to admit. It's possible that I identify with this book so much because of the fact, Robbie, you've heard me say it. I think December 21, 2012 is significant simply because it comes before December 22nd. I don't think there's any significance to that date at all. But at the same time, I have said, I think we will see increased cataclysms, tremendous catastrophes. The world has already has always had them, but I think we're going to continue to see them, and we're going to see them with increasing frequency and intensity as we pass through this part of the galaxy. Seems like it happens every 13,000 years or so. So I think that we will see that, and we will survive. That's the point. And that's the whole focus of everything that I say about it. I think we'll survive. And yes, there will be some who don't because of these great cataclysms. But we, as the human race, are going to survive. The world will go on. And things will settle back down. Your book has some of that worldview in it, in that there is a way through this, not a way out of it, but there's a way through it. And it doesn't focus on, oh my God, December the 21st, 2012, this is it. It doesn't focus on that. Now, having said that, I also want to say to those of you who think I'm dead wrong and you think that December the 21st, 2012 is D-Day for Earth and it's going to be an Earthbuster day, you might be right. You might be right. And we'll find out on December 21st. And, you know, I don't chuckle at it, but I think there is a way through. And I don't think it's an earthbuster and all life on Earth is going to end and it's the end of our race. I don't think so. So this book is very, very hopeful because, as you've already said, you know, there's time on the other side of the calendar.
Absolutely. You know, and looking at what you just said and putting it into perspective, you know, I'm not, and the listeners, you know, don't get me wrong when I say this, but to be given a vision of such calamity and writing it in the script, and you know, I've been on Kevin, I've been on your show, and I've talked to, now I'm just going to pull one out of my hat, but I said, you know, the two suns in China, they were seen in the sky. Do you remember that?
I do, but we're going to have to wait till after this break to get to it. All right, folks, we will take a break, and we'll be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. And for those of you joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. We're delighted you're here. My sympathy for whatever it is that kept you away from that first hour. But we're glad you're here now. And my guest this evening is Robbie Thomas. We're talking about a fabulous book he has written. That book is entitled Time Shift, The Paradigm. Robbie, as we went away for break, you were about to tell us something about in China where they saw two suns in the sky.
Yeah, we discussed this, you and I, a while ago, where I was on a show and I made a mention about two suns being in the sky, the hieroglyphics that were given to me, seeing this vision and jotting it down. And I sent the picture itself and sketching to a film producer of Dead Whisper. And I spoke to you about it, just a little after that as well. And then we spoke again, not too long ago. And you said your son was in China when that happened, that occurrence happened. And it brought back memories when I was talking with
you. No, it was my son-in-law.
Son-in-law, sorry. Mm-hmm. And it brought back memories where I was talking, and I mentioned to you about drawing those two suns, and they would be seen in broad daylight in the sky before a nation, and these are times that are changing, and things are going to happen. In looking at the relevance of that alone, you know, I wasn't even thinking anything of it, and then coming to the book and seeing the 9.0 and tsunami, writing it in, and then going to the premise of the book, all the different scopes of the North Pole and different places as well that are in the book, and then the end, which is a huge turnabout kicker.
Yeah, it is,
because no one's going to think that in a million years.
You know, you're talking about the two suns that were seen in the sky. Not long after that. Now, I may have the city wrong. It's in China. I think it happened in Shanghai, but I could have that city wrong. Could be a different city. But we'll say it's Shanghai. The people walked out one day and going about their business. They look up in the sky and they see, if it is Shanghai, then what they're looking at in the sky is ancient Shanghai. They can see it very clearly, and nobody had an explanation for that. It was a city in the sky above their city, and it was the ancient city. Had you heard about that?
No. So when you're telling me this, it's reflective of the fact of mirrored image.
Yeah. See, I thought about that too whenever I started this book. When I started reading this book and got into what was happening and what people were seeing, I remembered having read that story. And in fact, there are pictures of it still on the internet. You can find those on the internet, folks. I want to open the telephone lines and invite the audience to join us. So if you have a question, if you have a comment for Robbie Thomas, please feel free to give us a call. The telephone number is 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. Also, remember, if you are not in the USA and you're not in Canada, we have an additional way for you to get in touch with us. It's called a flash message. Just go to my website, scroll down, you'll see the picture about tonight's show, and right above that picture, you'll see a link that says flash message. All right, let's go to the telephone, and caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Yes, this is Mike. Thank you, Kevin.
Hello, Mike.
Hello, Robbie.
Hello, how are you?
I'm fine. I'm a long-time UFO investigator and paranormal investigator also. And one of the things I totally disagree with is you know, in this age where we have instant everything, we can get in touch with it, people anywhere almost instantly. This medium should be used, from my perspective only real now, without thought of put it in books, put it in this, but should just be shared. I've never charged a person a penny for sharing information with them, and I'm not saying that you should not or anybody else, but I'm just saying that's my perspective on it.
Well, that's a good perspective. You know, and I applaud you for that. I am an author, and looking at the scope of work, what I do, and I'm sure you heard Kevin speak of what I do with families and police, and you have to understand that scope too. For many years, almost 20 plus years, I've never charged a dime to fly out of my own pocket around internationally helping families or accepted a reward. So therefore, I have children to feed, and I'm going to be blunt and I'm going to be straightforward with you. I have children to feed. I have two children who have diseases. You know, I live in a country where a lot of stuff is covered, but a lot isn't as well. So therefore, you have to look at my perspective is, this is my job. So I write the book, I put the book out there, and I'm glad you brought that up, and I'm glad I got to speak my piece.
Well, you know, I don't take it personally just because I advocate it. I realize that authors have to spend money to make money, and you go through a lot of rigmarole just to get something published. And your film work you do coming off of the scripts is justified. But I know there's just too many people out there, and I'm not including you here, that'll just throw together a dime novel and sell it for $1 million, if you know what I mean.
Oh, I understand. Yes, I do. I totally understand. And again, just looking at the perspective of everything, you know, I'm putting it into my own corner without having to put it out to other authors or other script writers. You know, when I do take off, say, let's go to Kentucky, or I'm going down to New Orleans, or I'm going to Indiana, I'm in Canada. So what comes out of my pocket is what feeds my family to go help another family. And to not charge them or accept a diamond reward for anything I do upon hours. I'm not talking, you know, just 10 minutes. I'm talking upon hours, days, weeks. So when I look at that, and then I have to say, this is my livelihood. So I have to write a book. I'm not a UFO individual or, say, someone who is cryptozoology or someone who else is doing something different in the paranormal field, where they have a 9-to-5 job and then they do this on the side. This is what I do.
Well, and let me say this. Let me ask a question, Mike. I know you're retired. What sort of work did you do before you retired?
Well, I worked for like 34 years. The last 34 years for a corporation in the axle division. We made the axles for trucks that go across, plus military axles and things of this nature. But yeah, I understand exactly where Robbie's coming from, and I don't.
Okay, well, yeah, but you don't know where I'm coming from. Okay, hang on, Mike. When you went to work each and every day, you were doing that to get money to take care of your family, and you didn't do that for free.
No,
and so,
correct.
And I know you're not attacking Robbie, even if you think Robbie's wrong, it's okay to say what you think. But I'm just making a point. People need to understand they go to work and they people all over the world, they go to work and they do what they do and they don't do it for free. And so when you have someone who researches and spends money to research, while they're researching, nobody's paying them and they still have to feed their families. And so when they publish a book or put out a DVD, it's only right if somebody wants that book or they want that DVD, it's only right for them to pay for it, because this is how they afford, this is how the researcher affords to stay in the business of providing that information. It doesn't come free. And I know you were not I understand what you were saying. You were not aiming anything negative at Robbie, but I just wanted to take that opportunity, Mike, to make that point for the whole audience, and that is everybody does what they do for pay. And then there are some things they do for free. I hear sometimes people talk about security guards and they call them rent-a-cops. I am a cop, a lifetime cop, and I'm going to tell you 100% of the cops you know are rent-a-cops. If you don't think they are, you just pass a law that says you're not going to pay them anymore and see how many show up for work tomorrow.
Sure, and that's true anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you, Robbie, keep up what you're doing. I'm not one of these doom and gloomers either, as Kevin will tell you. And I'm all in favor of those who can come out with the rainbow effect rather than the dark, stormy clouds. So you have a good night, and thank you for entertaining me. And, Kevin, good show.
Thank you.
No, thank you, Mike. That was really good. And I know Mike wasn't attacking me.
No, he wasn't.
Good. I'm glad his perspective got out there. And I was glad to address it in, just stepping away from what he was saying, my perspective and how I work. But, it was great. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, and it's an important thing, especially now, because there's so many people around the world of the Internet whose attitude is, if you can't give it to me for free, take a hike. And, of course, my attitude is, if you want to steal it from my family's table, you take a hike. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Steve from Georgia.
Hello, Steve.
Hey, and this is another tremendous program here, and I know both you gentlemen are acquainted with the old saying that sometimes there's more truth in fiction than there is in fact. And something I'd like to point out is the fact that similar themes to this are occurring to a lot of writers out there right now. There's a lot of stuff going on about dimensional shifts and time shifts and parallel worlds coming together. And what all this reminds me of is, for those of us who are acquainted with the writings in the Bible, prophets and people who speak in parables, is there is a lot of truth that comes through in the form of metaphors and similes. There's a lot of really important eternal principles that come through. And, people who are tapped into a creative mindset, as you are, Robbie, are able to tap into a level of truth that, folks that are locked into, what's Britney Spears wearing today, or, who's on Dancing with the Stars, they don't have access to that level of truth because they don't allow their minds into that level. They haven't deprogrammed themselves enough or allowed that part of the brain to turn on. Now, your brain is turned on to that, Robbie, and so you are receiving impulses that, you're able to put it down in the form of a metaphor, the book that you're writing, which sounds intriguing, and you can count on I'll be one of the readers of it. And, I just want to express my gratitude to you for the time that you're putting into this and the effort. And it's paralleling a lot of the places where I've been going lately, and I receive it as confirmation.
That's really well said, and I just want to add to that, if I may. It was sitting there, and when you say metaphorically, it is the objective of putting this together, and after it was done, I turned to my wife and I said, there's the messages, it is there. The message is in the book. It's laid out for everybody. And I honestly, I'm not trying to make this to be out some sci-fi feel out there, because I'm the most realistic individual you can think. I mean, I chase murderers and, looking at dead bodies and things. So when we talk about the realm of what we're talking about here, I looked at her and I said, it was almost like somebody was reaching through me and putting that on paper. It was amazing.
Well, that's exactly how that creative flow works, Robbie. And I find it interesting that the people in Kansas in your book looked up and saw a parallel world of destruction, you know, their world, only maybe post-apocalyptic. You know, in the realm of myth is on that level of creativity. Achilles' shield. Achilles was a mighty warrior, a demigod, supposedly, and one of the ways that he was so effective in battle was when he would deploy his shield, his opponent would see his own death reflected in that shield and would be frozen by the image of his own demise. And then, he was rendered ineffective in battle, and Achilles would defeat him that way. You know, and we ourselves are able, I think, if we tune into the right vibrations, we can see the directions that we're headed. We see where things are going, and we can change our timeline if we want. You know, and it sounds like that's the direction you're going with that book. And
you're absolutely right. And I don't want to give it away, but you're absolutely right. And I'm sorry for cutting you off. I mean, you know, I'm excited the way you're talking about this because, you know, it's almost like I want to tell you now because it's amazing. You'll enjoy the book, and I would love to hear from you what you thought of the book as well.
Even, Steve, even with what you're saying and with what Robbie just said about what you're saying, you won't figure this ending out. You really won't. Okay, thanks, Steve. We have to run. Great call.
Absolutely.
Now, And folks, the telephone line is open at 623-444-5889. And we have an additional way for you to get in touch with us if you are outside of the USA and if you're outside of Canada. You know, if you're in the USA or Canada, give us a call. If you're outside, it can be pretty expensive to call, although if you call, it will work. 623-444-5889. But if you're outside of the USA or Canada and you want to avoid that extreme cost of international long distance, you can use the flash message option. Just go to my website, scroll down, you'll see the picture about tonight's show, and right above the picture is a link that says flash message. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hey, this is Leah from Tennessee.
Hello, Leah.
Hey, Robbie, is there particular people that you modeled the main characters in your book after?
No, that's a great question. I just took a scope of everyone in my life, and then as Kevin was talking, you know, I had to give the alter ego of the ego and put the main characters, the president, the vice president, even certain people that were in his staff, like Reynolds. Ann Reynolds, you know, looking at the White House chief of staff that we have, and I'm Canadian, I consider myself American, you know, and the premise of what is going on there, and then looking at the people I've worked with throughout my life in the paranormal. It's amazing. And then taking everything that you see, what I've just told you, and coming to this little town of Kansas, this little place, you know, I did the Sally House, and it took me 18 hours to drive to the middle of America to film the Sally House in 2007. So I was pondering the point, where do I go? Where can it be more realistic than anywhere? And I remembered, Kansas. Why not a little town called Owensville? You know, so now you know the name of the town. And the premise of that town is there's this farming community, and they're so loving people, and they know each other.
Yeah, but you do have one jackass in there.
Yes, I had to interlink somebody who's the town choir or the mayor, who happens to have this persona about himself that is, you know, out there. Because everybody has that in the town. So, you know, just keeping it real.
Are you feeling any slack? Because The Wizard of Oz, that had tremendous amount of message in it, too, and a very magical place, but it also told a lot of truth in it, too.
And it started in Kansas.
It did, didn't it? Click your heels, Dorothy.
Yeah. Well, good luck.
Thank you.
And thank you.
Thanks for the call. And I can tell you, when you pick this book up, you, along with Dorothy, will be able to say, we're not in Kansas anymore, Toto. Yeah.
Yeah.
623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. You know, Mike made a really good point about, you know, people go out there and they do a little bit of research and then they become a great big expert and they write a book and, you know, it's worth about 10 cents and they make $1 million on it. It's a good point because that goes on. And I get books sent to me all the time, Robbie. In fact, I have a closet here that is full, packed with books that I've accumulated over the years. If people send me books, and I don't want to discourage people sending me books. Because when they come, I read them. But I can tell you that there are a great many of these books where the person really doesn't have a point. I mean, you read the book and you get through it and you go, well, what was the point of that? You know, it didn't focus. It didn't do anything. It just gave you reference type information. Okay, well, I guess you can use it as a reference. But even in your novel, even though it is a novel, it's focused. It has a point. And after you read the book, ladies and gentlemen, you'll be able to sit down and write down what's the point here. You'll be able to describe what's the point of this book. And that's very important, in my opinion. If the author doesn't have a point, what's the point of writing?
You know, when I started to write it, too, I mean, I write factual books and never touched upon a novel. And when I started to write the script, again, we're talking about a fictional story called Time Shift. In the eyes of warping it into a horror, thriller-type suspense movie. And then the happening happened. It changed me. It took me, and it altered what I wanted to do and the way I felt about the storyline. And then I sat back for, I don't know, maybe a week or two, just trying to get my bearings on all the news on the TV and picking myself off the floor of what happened and feeling sorry, like, you know, God bless those people and everybody who was affected by this. And then sitting there thinking, how can I put this into a book? I just knew it had to be done. So I just started writing it, and here we are. And it's just been one magnificent ride. But when you talk about putting it into a structured field and where people can walk along with you, not being pushed, but walk alongside the writer, you know, I've had people tell me that the picture that's been painted, it's like they're right there with me, walking along and seeing these things happen.
All right, we can step away from the break. We will return in just a moment. More with Mr. Robbie Thomas.
I just listened to Kevin Smith's show and my IQ jumped 20 points.
Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. The telephone lines are open, 623-444-5889, 623-444-5889. We also have the flash message option for those of you outside of the USA and outside of Canada. And feel free to join the conversation. All right, we have a flash message from Jerry in New Zealand. Jerry says, your book sounds very much like our native people here. Did you draw on the, and I think it's pronounced Maori culture for any part of your book? You know, Robbie, we could hear you better if I'd turn your mic on. So there you go.
Okay.
So go ahead, answer what Jerry has asked from New Zealand.
That's amazing. I focus this on a people. Again, not just like any race or any culture, creed. I base this on the whole entire human race. And I know of the Maori. And
how did you say it?
Maori.
Maori. Okay.
Now, there's a movie out of a little girl. I don't know if you've seen it before. And she was, it had about the whales. I can't think of the name of the movie right now. Fantastic movie. It was based in New Zealand and the tribal people there. It was fantastic. I love that movie. If I can think of the movie, I'll let you know, Kevin, later. It was well done. And, you know, just looking at that, how they're so people-oriented, so lovable, and that culture themselves, that's a good reflective point. And I'm glad he brought it up. But it is about the whole human race. And I'm glad we got a call, somebody who wrote in from New Zealand about this. That's fantastic.
Well, we also have Lynn from the UK who wants to know if your book is going to be available at bookstores in the UK.
It is available on Amazon.co.uk right now in Kindle form, and also they can order it through Amazon in the UK. They can go to my website here. And also, I know there was somebody in the UK who I spoke with not too long ago. They walked into one of their bookstores and they can order it. So, yeah, it's available.
I have a very long flash message from Dean in England. And I'm going to summarize. He says, regarding time travel, well, Dean, this isn't about time travel, but I'm going to go ahead and summarize this. Regarding time travel, I've often felt that if one could purposely induce an experience where the five senses were massively bombarded all at once, and then he gives a description of extreme loud music, flashing lights in your eyes, take a shot of strong tequila, inhale smelling salts, and so forth. All five senses just get bombarded all at once. And if you do this over and over and over, after a while, your mind may think that this is happening to you for the first time, when in fact it's the 10th time, which in effect you've time traveled. I wanted to read that. He said, in effect, you trick time by tricking your consciousness. Dean, this book's really not about time travel. It's about time shift. But if you trick your consciousness, you haven't done anything to time. What you've got is a tricked consciousness. But time still did what it did through the whole experience. So you actually didn't travel in time or trick time. It still was the constant in the experiment, although time is not a constant, but you understand the example. But you can trick your consciousness fairly easily. And you can trick your consciousness into thinking something is real when it's not, thinking something's not real when it is. And people do this all the time. It's the business the mass media is in. And they're constantly telling you, you didn't see what you saw. And constantly refusing to report what you know you saw. And refusing to report what's actually going on. And it tricks people's consciousness into thinking that's real when it's not real. And wars get fought based on that. And, well, based on that, I would say those are lies, but it tricks people's consciousness into believing things that aren't real. Okay. 623-444-5889. Ladies and gentlemen, what do you think it would be like? Put yourself in these shoes. And the shoes are, you walk out one day, you look up in the sky, and what you see is another universe. And it's right here with you. And there are flashes of light, and there's thunder that sounds like atomic bombs going off and shakes buildings. Not a regular storm type of thunder. Something like you've never heard before, and that's going on. Then the military moves in, blocks access to your town. You can't get in, you can't get out. They say, we're here to help you, and you're there. You are. You're there. You can't get out of it. And they even tell the sheriff, run along, little boy. They don't use those words, but that's about what they do. And imagine yourself in those circumstances. You may be in circumstances similar to that in the not-too-distant future. And imagine what that's like. Put yourself in the situation and imagine you're there and you can't get out. And the world and the universe as you know it is not operating as you thought you understood it. What would be your response? How would you feel about that? Adele is from the USA, and so it only shows me Adele, and it shows me USA, and it shows me Adele's email, but the message is deleted because it's USA. That was a flash message. We have filters on it, and if it's in the USA, it's not going to show me the message. It dumps it. It just shows me that I got one, that's all. Robbie, whenever you have, for lack of a better word, a vision like this, are you like distant from it, like if you were watching it on TV, or do you feel like you're in it and you feel the emotions and so forth that you would feel if that was actually happening around you?
Yeah, that's a great point. I'm actually feeling like I'm in it. I'm involved. It has evolved around me, so I become part of. It's like doing a missing persons case, murder case. Before little Victoria Stafford went missing, I was given a vision and shown she walked into the tree line, the big pile of rocks that were right by the tree line, and the laneway that was adjacent from the tree line, running parallel. So I drew all this, and over the course of a couple of days, then a little girl went missing. And of course, I was in touch with the family, and the outcome of that was just recently the second individual was found guilty of 3 counts of murder and serving life forever now. We found her body in the tree line, right by the rocks, right by the laneway. And so it's where, like a movie, and Kevin has had the opportunity to work with me to know what it's like. It's like I'm there. It's like I'm taking part. So when this vision came up, the tsunami and the 9.0, I was so, for lack of a better term, hyped out of writing this script and being so involved in it. And then this vision came. I think I duped myself, because I was so involved in doing the script, I didn't pay attention to what Spirit was telling me. And again, looking back in hindsight, sometimes we have to start paying attention to things. And so then the premise of the book too, you know, it's a great, great life we have, but we have to pay attention.
I want to say this about the book. A person who's not really in tune with, you know, what today we call spirituality will absolutely love this book. They will absolutely love it. And people who are tuned in will love it. And here's why. Because you have pretty masterfully woven spiritual concepts into this, not religious concepts, but spiritual concepts, without it sticking out and looking and sounding woo-woo. So a person that's not tuned in would never even notice it, and yet it would have a very positive effect, I think. A person who is tuned in will read it and say, oh, I recognize that. I'm familiar with that. How did you really give any conscious thought to that, or did that just happen?
No, just keeping it real. Looking again, I didn't want to overemphasize on the structure of writing a fallacy or something that was so tremendously put on the onus of create this picture for me and let me see how far you can really warp my mind. I wanted to keep it real and down to earth, so that putting it into a fictional novel, but keeping the premise that it was based on a factual event, and not only that, but in the fictionalized writing itself, it's very probable and it is practical. So I kept it in that sense.
Have you ever lived in a place where they had martial law?
You know, I have never lived in a place. No, none. No.
I have. I used to work in war zones, and so I have even been a part of the martial law. Now, before anybody gets all bent out of shape, folks, you have to understand, we had people with bombs and grenades, and they were blowing people up, and, you know, so we had to have curfews. We had to get things cooled down at the end of their conflict, and then stepped back and turned it all over to their own government. But we had to provide that as a buffer, to let things cool back down. But I've lived where there was martial law and there were curfews, and you'd be laying there trying to sleep at night, and an American tank or two or four would come down the street. Well, if you haven't ever heard one, I mean, they're really, really loud. But that curfew means town is shut. No coming in, no going out, nobody on the street. And your book, as I read it, I wondered, we talk about this little town in Kansas there. Have you ever been where there was martial law? Because you described it so well.
No, it's just, again, going through the premise of the mindset, the feel for the writing.
Okay, we have to step away for break again, and we will return right after this. To the Kevin Smith Show. We are on Final Approach. We only have a few minutes left in tonight's show. If you plan on calling, it'd be a good time to get started. 623-444-5889. Robbie, we have a flash message from Neville in Australia. He says, I just bought Robbie's book this very moment on Amazon.com for a very good price, I might add. I had to buy it because Robbie describes on your show something that was shown to me in 1976 about a future event in the sky. So amazing. I can't wait to read it. Great show as usual, Kevin. Neville, thank you.
Thank you, Neville.
I do recommend that you go get this book, folks. It's not expensive, and it's well worth a great deal more than it's going to cost you. And in fact, it, after you read it, I think you will say it was really not a cost at all. And it, as I say, it's not expensive. What do you hope people will walk away with after they read this book?
A change. A better look at themselves within. A knowing and an understanding and the acceptance that there is much more that mankind themselves can do rather than waiting on or putting the onus on God, Spirit, and everything else. We got to start to look inward.
All right. Now, let me ask you as best I can. I may not get this worded right, but I'm going to try. So let me ask you this. When you say you want people to walk away after reading this book, you want them to walk away with a change. And you've told us the basic outlook of the book is that, yeah, bad stuff is coming, but there's a way through. There's a way around that, a way to survive that. So we put that together, and is it something that you absolutely think is going to happen, or you just hope that we're going to get through it?
You know, in the beginning you spoke of, and it touched upon the very tangible. So in hindsight, again, looking at what you said and what my hope and desire is for the human race is, you know, there is stuff that is going to happen. It's up to us. It really truly is. Mankind is their own worst enemy. We have to take a strong look and stance and stop what is going on. I'm not trying to get political. I'm not trying to get religious. I'm not trying to get anything other than what is the truth. And until we can accept the truth, a lot of people are going to walk with blinders on until the happening or a happening. Once again, like the 9.0, and it was given, and it's showing people that, you know, if I can let this guy know, and he writes about it, and it's true, and it's been posted days before, then, you know, people, we have to get a grip, and it's up to us.
Well, you know, I kind of have two minds about whether there's going to be any outside intervention or not. On the one hand, I hope so, because it sure makes things a lot quicker and easier for us if there's outside intervention that rescues us. That's going to make it a lot easier for us. But I'm not sure that really is what's good for us. Because, folks, just think of all the bank bailouts. Outside intervention, your pocketbook, save their asses. And did they change their ways? No, they repossessed your property. And now they're in trouble again and need another bailout. They didn't learn. And they didn't learn because they didn't have to go through the consequences of their corrupt actions. And so outside intervention is like a bank bailout. We don't learn from it. And I think the only way for us to learn is we have to face the consequences of our own stupidity and what we have allowed to happen on this planet. But if we learn, and we learn fast enough, we can find a way through it to the other side and maybe never be that way again, I hope. But I guess we'll see. If intervention comes and we get rescued, they say, hey, you know, we're here to rescue you. and they offer us a way to be rescued, I probably won't turn it down. I just don't really think that's going to happen. Do you, Robbie?
No, I think in the long and short run of everything that realistically and being a realist, we, the people of this planet that we live on, have corrupted, destroyed, you know, and fractured a lot of different things in life. Of course, we're being looked at and looked upon, but it is up to us. I mean, you know, the, like you spoke of bailouts and, you know, the last minute gung-ho, come in and save me. I think that's all for the movies. This is real. And it's time that we all wake up and, you know, the Aquarius and what have you. This is humanity we're talking about.
And your book, Time Shift, without getting preachy about it, without getting philosophical about it, presents in a very fun, exciting read some solution. And I don't know how you did it. I mean, I know you, and I still don't know how you did this. It is masterful. That sounds like an insult, doesn't it? I don't mean it that way. I mean, I know you. I know you've got talent. I know you're a very smart person. And knowing that, I still don't know how you wove all this stuff together. I can see so many themes and so many nuances in this book. I don't know how you did it.
I question myself as well. And again, you know, when we're driven and there's that force within, we are of spirit. So I'm a very spiritual person. So I know that was the main course of the driving directions that were pointing me in the right way. Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's a movie put into a book.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And, you know, we've got film producers, movie producers that are part of our family here listening to the show. You guys need to get in touch with Robbie, and may the highest bidder win. You know, it's that's I'm telling you, guys, you make movies, that's a blockbuster. If you have any talent with making movies at all, that's a blockbuster, and you really ought to get it. You ought to buy the rights to it. Robbie, I want to thank you for being with us this evening. It has been enjoyable and interesting to have you back with us.
No, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
All right, if you will, just stay on the phone with me here for a moment as I bring tonight's show in for a landing. Those of you who have tickets to the Alternative Universe Eye Conference, it happens tomorrow, okay? And we have sent out now 4 mailings to make sure everybody has their ticket. If you didn't get it, there's something wrong with your email account or something. We're going to send another one out after the show tonight to make sure you have your ticket to the conference. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. And you may call me whatever you'd like to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.